This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. Time now for my usual Thursday visit with John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's always great to have you with us.
Always great to be here, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Well, a lot of big stories this week. Let's get to as many of them as we can. Let's start with the failed car bomb attempt in New York City. In the end, of course, the bomb failed to go off, and the man believed to be responsible, Faisal Shahzad, nabbed off that flight from JFK Airport just minutes before takeoff. Some say this shows that the system works. Others say that we probably got a bit lucky here. Who's right?
Well, I think the latter are right. And this is going to raise some serious questions about how the president, the Department of Homeland Security, and the intelligence boys, led by John Brennan, are doing on this. I've just come from a briefing at the White House, and Robert Gibbs did not want to offer any details on the meetings that have been held on this. It should be pointed out that there have been three major terrorist incidents in the last year. The first, of course, was at Fort Hood, and that was a tragedy. Then followed the underwear bomber on Christmas Day in Michigan. Again, an alert citizen foiled what could have been a major tragedy on the most important of holidays. And then finally New York, in which someone set out to do a very dastardly act, foiled by citizens. That's two out of three situations that were averted by private individuals, not by any master plan for protecting our shores. That was not the case under the previous administration. And I would simply suggest to you that the president will have to look very closely at his Homeland Security team before a fourth incident comes up, and we wonder whether it'll be foiled or failure.
John, let's move to the oil slick in the Gulf of Mexico. As of now, the leak has not been completely shut down, and the containment strategy is obviously yet to be seen because the flow continues, but this slick is getting extremely close to the coastline. Obviously, politics injected into this, as it is just about anything else. Some say it's time to shut down offshore drilling entirely. Others say the Obama administration was asleep at the switch. How do you see this getting all sorted out?
Well, again, just because you have one bad incident, it should not stop the whole policy. I might add that a policy that the president is moving toward quite rapidly so that we do not have to go through another energy crunch at this point, as are many of the state's governors. Certainly Governor Jindal of Louisiana is not advocating a complete retreat on this. I think there always has to be blame in situations such as what is going on in the off the Louisiana shore, and in this case, everyone is looking at British Petroleum, which I might add had always touted its reputation as being environmentally fastidious. I do believe that their CEO, who's becoming quite a presence on the television talk shows, is going to have a lot of explaining to do on this, and that's where the explaining should be done, by BP, not by government officials in Washington or in Baton Rouge.
And John, we'll get to some brass knuckles politics in just a moment, but let's move to another story that could have a huge economic impact, and that's the ongoing credit crisis in Greece. It potentially could have effects on many other European countries and maybe even the United States. The massive market drop in the United States today that has now come back to some extent was believed to be linked to that. Now it appears it might not have been. But as you assess the credit crisis in Greece and the response to it, what do you expect to happen here?
Well, I expect there's going to be a big push by the International Monetary Fund to come in and join the European Union in a Greek bailout. I might add this will be the IMF's second time at the plate dishing out a loan to the Greeks. Greece has 9 million people, 1 million of whom are on some form of public service payroll, and the median retirement age is 53 years old, and one gets considerable health and retirement benefits. Now, a system like that that does not radically reorder itself is going to be in line for a third bailout at some time. And, of course, here on Capitol Hill, when they see Dominique Strauss-Kahn, the managing director of the IMF, talking about another bailout, they feel that the U.S. will have to pony up again. Last year, in linking IMF funding to a supplemental piece of legislation, Congress voted $100 billion to the World Lending Agency over a 10-year period. It seems very likely we're going to be asked to pony up once again, and members of Congress are getting very upset about it. Congressman Mike Pence and Kathy McMorris Rodgers, the chairman and vice chairman, respectively, of the House Republican Conference, have already voiced their objections to the Secretary of the Treasury. We're going to hear a lot more on my big, fat Greek bailout.
John, let's move on to the politics now, as promised, but we'll stay in Europe briefly to start this discussion. Today is Election Day in the United Kingdom. We'll find out potentially later today who will be the new ruling party in the House of Commons. Some say we could see a coalition government for the first time in a very long time in Britain. A couple weeks ago, you predict the Conservatives and David Cameron would come out on top. What do you say here in the 11th hour?
David Cameron by a hair. His victory will be the tightest for a governing party since Harold Wilson's Labour Party won the House of Commons by 4 votes in 1964. I find it interesting that in the twilight hours of the voting, the turnout is headed for record numbers. And this is pretty dramatic because in the last election, 05, 61% of eligible voters turned out. And now the numbers are almost electrifying, possibly well over 70, perhaps 80% of the vote. My guess is that in the end, there is always a reluctance to throw one's vote away. And that's why the support for Liberal Democratic leader Nick Clegg is fading. And people, I think, are saying better the devil they don't know than the devil they do know. And they will choose conservative newcomer David Cameron over Prime Minister Gordon Brown. It'll be close, but it'll be Prime Minister Cameron.
John, back here in Washington, kind of a surprise, disappointment for Democrats. Republicans probably pretty happy to see this, that one of the longest-tenured House Democrats, David Obey of Wisconsin, chairman of the House Appropriations Committee, will not, in fact, seek re-election later this year. He claims he would have won, and that's not why he's getting out. He says he's just bone-weary, and he's accomplished some of his major goals, including health care reform. Your thoughts on Dave Obey stepping aside?
Well, I think it's strange that someone who has $1.4 million in his campaign kitty and is one of the most powerful members of Congress and has really not had a difficult race in 41 years in the House of Representatives wouldn't suddenly switch gears, do a 180-degree turnabout, and switch rather than fight. Ashland County District Attorney Sean Duffy, who's been profiled in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, appeared to be a very attractive challenger to the 71-year-old Congressman Obey, and I think it had less to do with being tired and more to do with dealing with Duffy. We have to keep our eye on some other senior committee chairmen. My personal bet is that Ike Skelton, the chairman of the Armed Services Committee, John Spratt, chairman of the Budget Committee, will eventually quit their seats in Missouri and South Carolina, respectively, rather than go through a grueling process this fall.
John, last question, less than 30 seconds to answer it. Dan Coats wins the Republican Senate primary in Indiana, overpowering a Tea Party challenge from Marlon Stutzman. Has he been severely damaged so that the Democrats might be able to hold the seat, or will Coats be able to win?
Not at all. Dan Coats will make a triumphant comeback, not exactly on the scale of Winston Churchill or Charles de Gaulle returning to power, but dramatic nonetheless. He beat two very aggressive, much younger challengers and now faces someone who broke a promise to oppose a health care bill without a ban on tax dollars for abortion, Congressman Brad Ellsworth, and who has an overall liberal record that many say is more liberal than the Democrat retiring Evan Bayh. I call it Coats not in a slam dunk, but by an easy margin. Not bad for a 66-year-old.
John, we'll keep watching that as well as many other races around the country. Thanks for your time as always.
Looking forward to elections across the pond and just across the Potomac. I'm John Gizzi on Capitol Hill.
John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily.